So Apple came out with all this new stuff this week, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was at the mall and I was like, I'm going to go to the Apple store and check everything out. And I was just kind of not really paying attention. I was on the phone and I just walked into the Apple store.
Right.
But it wasn't the Apple store. Okay. Well, it looked like the Apple store, but then I noticed there was a big Windows logo on the wall. And it turns out I was in the Microsoft store, not the Apple store.
Do they have colored t-shirts?
Yeah. Badges.
Wooden tables?
Wooden tables. White, bright light all over the place. Glass front.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Not Apple store.
No. This is a mall that, by the way, has an Apple store, a Sony store, and now a Microsoft store. Well, all within like very short distance of each other.
Were there a lot of people in the store?
There was a decent amount. I didn't even know it opened.
Were they buying a lot of stuff?
It did not look like one person was buying anything.
See, that's funny because...
Are they selling stuff? Because, well, I went in there. Are they selling stuff?
Well, I don't know because I always heard that, you know, if you have a nice store and advertise it well, that's all you need to sell expensive computer products. That's not how it goes? But
right. Yeah. No, that's it. That's the theory.
So why weren't they selling stuff?
It was really weird. It was a nice store. I'm not sure I get the point of the store because Apple makes sense to have a store because they make their own hardware. So you make your hardware, you want to sell it in a store. I get it. Mm-hmm. Microsoft is a software company. They have a little bit of hardware. They have the Xbox.
Kinect.
But that's it. It's not an Xbox Kinect store. So they're selling other people's hardware. They're selling other computers.
I understand the problem here.
I don't get it. I don't understand. I'm confused.
You're expecting an initiative from Steve Ballmer to make sense. That's the problem.
Oh, I think he stopped making sense years ago.
That's what I'm saying. Like you don't expect it. If you expect it to be crazy town. You expect it to be myopic and you expect it to be like, you know, if you put a logos window on it, it will sell. That's the mentality you have to have, Scott.
Like,
come on.
You know, I like Microsoft.
That's all you need.
Just don't understand the point.
All you need. That's the only reason Apple products sell shiny lights.
There were two nice things about that store. One was they had all the Windows Phone 7 phones there. So it was cool to compare and contrast. Didn't matter what carrier. That was nice. Yeah.
And I think those phones are awesome.
Yeah. They are pretty awesome, actually. And they had a Kinect setup that you can play with.
Which is awesome.
So that's cool. But as far as a store, it's not really a store per se. You know, I mean, I guess they sell stuff. But like I said, I did not see anybody buying anything in there.
I always felt that way about the mall. They have the Sony store as well, and it's always the same kind of thing. You walk in, you're like, "Oh, cool! It looks like this. It looks like an Apple store." And you kind of walk by, like, "Should I go?" No, I don't want to buy anything from Sony. No. So I'm not really.
I mean, I get
in.
Like Sony, though. It makes sense to have a store,
sure,
because they make
and also
products.
They have. You know, when I take that back, I would go in to play the PlayStation.
Yeah, and they had like 3D PlayStation with the 3D TVs and stuff like that, which was kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know, in the Sony store. I'm getting a little confused.
They're all the same.
But and then, of course, you walk by the Apple store, and it's packed, and people are walking out with bags of computers and discs and everything under this. iPods.
Not
and
discs
iPhones.
For very long. Oh, not discs for very long.
That's true. Well, we're going to get into that.
Yeah. On that storefront, there is – I don't know if you saw this. There was a story. There was a – in China, apparently.
I saw this. It's funny.
There are people working at stores in China, and they wear plastic badges that say Apple. They wear the blue and red shirts. They think they work for Apple Incorporated, and they are selling authentic Apple products. They are branded as Apple stores.
And they are not.
These are counterfeit stores, not products. The products are legit.
Like whole stores.
Exactly. Like, and it looks like, you know, you have translucent staircases. You have white tables. You have the same lighting. You have the same, it's same production design. It's
kind of amazing. But they are selling real Apple products?
Yeah. Apparently, they go and buy them from other resellers and then go take them to their stores in China and resell them there.
Wow. That's really funny.
And what was funny is the story broke and they started talking to people that work there who were actually really, really kind of pissed because they thought they were working for Apple.
Right.
And they're like, what do you mean? Like,
I don't work, really? Yeah. You gotta love that. Gotta love that.
But that's kind of amazing. If you figure counterfeit products, I get. But like actually
– especially out of China. I mean every product you could think of is counterfeit out of China.
Yeah, but really real products and a counterfeit store experience. I mean I guess that does speak to how important that experience can be for certain retailers.
True.
But it's kind of amazing. Funny. Yeah, it's kind of amazing.
There is no real Apple store in China, right?
I think they're opening one in Beijing. I don't think – they're not widespread.
Right. I mean I wouldn't be surprised if they were. I just – I didn't know if there was actually one. But I do not. Did you see a little tangent here on stores and stuff, but that it looks like the plans are being approved for a huge Apple store in, what was it, Union Station?
Grand Central Station
yeah, in New York.
It's going to be amazing.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
That's going to be very exciting, very cool. Actually. That's a neat thing. I'm curious to see, you know, what that turns out to be like.
This is funny. I'm trying to find if there are any stores in China.
And now it's all that article.
And now I can find that.
That's it. I mean, that makes sense. So on that note, it is July 23rd, 2011. This is Tech Bacon episode 22.
Boom.
Wow. 22. I'm Scott.
I'm Brian. Thanks for joining us. There are four stores in China.
Probably. Four official stores.
Official stores. Beijing, okay. Shanghai, Beijing, and Shanghai.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Boom.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Huge week.
Huge.
Huge week.
Another big Apple week.
Yeah. I mean, this was kind of the...
They keep doing things in just like big chunks.
Well, there's been a lot of build up to this week. You know, a lot of the stuff had been... You knew it was coming or been rumored it was coming. And this is the week where, you know, part of it dropped. And this is like the big drop. And then there's going to be one, you assume, in September with, you know, other devices. But there's like these are the two, you know, this is the first of the two big pushes for the end of the year.
Sure, sure.
And this week we saw the release finally of OS X Lion 10.7 and also new Mac Minis and MacBook Airs and the discontinuation of the plastic white MacBook.
Of the base model MacBook.
The old school, yeah.
Yeah.
So huge stuff. All this stuff dropped Wednesday. And also they had their earnings call on Tuesday.
Yes. That was kind of the first thing that came out.
This sounds ridiculous because every time they have an earnings call and it's like, oh, they beat expectations again and their biggest quarter ever again.
Right.
They seem to have a habit of doing this. iPhone sales this quarter were crazy. They sold 20 million iPhones. And they've established this trend now basically every single year since 2007, their iPhone business has doubled every single year.
I mean,
and that's not just like a couple of years. That's like the trend now since 2007 and just keeps growing. It's crazy. And a lot of it, I think, was, you know, you mentioned earlier, they were expanding into other countries, a lot of expansion abroad.
Yeah.
In China particularly.
Yeah, true. It's amazing when you look at the growth chart of Apple over the past decade, really. And opening up to the rest of the world like they have, especially with the iPhone, has been such a huge part of their growth. I mean, we think United States, we think locally, you know, you don't really see that until you see earnings like this on a global scale, and they're so massive. They're massive.
Yeah.
That's the only word I can use to describe it.
Well, especially with this market feels much more global than any other market does. I mean, PCs obviously are a huge market, but you always feel there wasn't really a market for premium PCs like there has been in the US or certain countries.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Where abroad, and also, I mean, there's a lot of expansion that hasn't happened yet in terms of, like, you know, countries that, you know, like India, they're mostly like prepaid,
sure,
and also
sure.
with China as well.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of countries where they don't work the way we do with, you know, subscriber, you know, carriers and,
right,
you know, and
right.
you know, subsidies and that kind of stuff.
That's
but
true.
They are growing. It's crazy.
It's crazy.
It's just kind of nuts. Crazy. And Mac business was up and
All around good.
Yeah.
Around good for Apple.
And I got to say, you keep waiting for there to be some sort of, not necessarily a stumble, but a leveling off of growth.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't happening. And like the big thing too is like, you know, the iPad, like there's when all this news about, you know, other tablets, what they've sold or what they've shipped versus they've sold, Apple sold every single iPad they could make. I mean, they can't actually, their supply chain is their biggest weakness right now in terms of, you know, a lot of their products, which is nuts.
It is.
It's crazy.
It is crazy.
But especially considering the iPhone 4 was released June of last year. You know,
is it a year already?
Yeah. It was like June, I want to say June 27.
Okay.
But like this is a phone that, you know, could have been released. They could have introduced a new one. You know, everybody expected them to. They didn't. And still with all that, they still sold, you know, they're still going. There's been no tapering off.
Yeah, exactly.
So good for them.
Good for Apple. And only seeming to get better now with all this new stuff that came out. So let's dig in, man.
Yeah. So I guess let's start with the hardware first. We can talk about the software in some more detail.
Cool.
The MacBook Air has become a very, very, you know, hot item in their lineup. The first generation that came out a couple years ago was very, very niche. You know, it was very slow.
It was expensive. The specs weren't great. Design-wise was beautiful and revolutionary, but actual machine specs –
Yeah, and that kind of changed a bit last year when they had the 2010 models, which
they came out with the 11-inch.
And the 11-inch and the 13. And they dropped the hard drive.
They dropped the hard drive. Solid state.
Exactly. And that one, you know, and they started, and the price point was at $999, and the performance wasn't really – it's still not to par with the MacBook Pro. But because of that SSD drive, it feels a lot faster, because instead of waiting for, you know, your hard drive to go and, you know spindle up or whatever, like if things just instantly there. Because right. That's the biggest, you know, restraint in – I mean the bottleneck in, you know, computer speed these days is the physical reality of a physical hard drive.
Yes, totally. I mean if you look at the specs they were able to – squeeze into this little Air, it makes sense that they've discontinued the white MacBook.
Right. You're talking about the specs on the new ones?
Yeah, on the new ones. I mean,
and to catch up on those, like they'd been running Core 2 Duos, which is a processor that's been around for a long time. And now they basically put either the i5 or the i7 on the machines. And if it's – depending on which machine, it's anywhere from 2 times to 2.5 times as fast, which is being borne out in
– and uses less power.
Yeah.
The i5 and i7, that's one of their big advantages is the way they consume power.
So. And I think on the 11-inch MacBook Air, it actually – you get longer battery life than the previous one.
Which is amazing.
Yeah. And these machines are smoking. I've been very upset, actually, Scott will tell you. There have been a bunch of benchmarks coming out where people testing the processor speed and that kind of stuff. And I'm very happy with my MacBook Pro that I've had since 07.
Right.
But you wonder, because you go to the Apple store and the machines feel fast. You're like, oh, that's neat. I wonder what I would just really like. It's upsetting when these machines, which are considered the low-end side, you know, they're like, this is the slower machines. You're making sacrifices for speed and, I mean, for, you know, size and that kind of supportability. They're testing like, you know, 5,500 in Geekbench scores, and my machine is 3,800. That's okay, though. I feel good about it. I feel good about my machine. It works. We're broadcasting the show. We're not recording the show.
We are.
We're not broadcasting, so we had lots of problems with Ustream.
But we're recording in Lion now, aren't we?
We are recording in Lion, Logic 9 in Lion. So
hey.
There we go.
That's very cool.
Yeah. So mission critical. We're trying it.
But these Airs are new specs on them. Backlit keyboard. They brought back the backlit keyboard, which was never on the Air.
I think it was on the first gen. They dropped it for the 2010 ones.
Okay. So it was on the first, but not on the second gen. Thunderbolt port.
Yes. And this is
which is big.
Yeah. And this is, I mean, you want to talk about the display as well?
Thunderbolt port, SD card slot.
On the 13 only.
On the 13-inch, which wasn't there before.
Oh, it wasn't?
No.
Oh, okay.
Or actually, maybe it was in the last refresh. I'm going from like two ago. Right. Maybe they did put it in the last one. I honestly can't remember. And then the screen. I know the screen's better. What were the specs on the screen? It's beautiful.
Thunderbolt display?
The display port, Thunderbolt display.
Right. Well, here's the big deal about the Thunderbolt on the MacBook Air, why it makes a lot of sense is that they have to sacrifice ports just because the size of this thing, you know. So you don't have a FireWire port, you know, you only have a USB port, you have the SD on the 13, and you have this Thunderbolt port. You know, it used to be a mini display port that now functions as both on Apple products.
Right.
And they introduced this 27-inch Thunderbolt display. Now, this is really, really exciting for me because right now I have a MacBook Pro that I have an external display on, and I have about 6 different wires, you know, plugged out, and everything's kind of a mess on the desk because you have all this different stuff. There's like, you know, I have a USB, I have a FireWire, I have an Ethernet, I have a display, I have all this stuff, right? With these other machines, you can either limiting the ports, so you have the USB and the Thunderbolt, right? But this Thunderbolt display, it's $999, I think. It's 27-inch display that you see, the same display that's on the iMac, which is beautiful. And it has built into it Ethernet, FireWire, USB, Thunderbolt for daisy chaining, and power. So the idea is you basically go and like get this MacBook Air or any other Mac, you know, laptop with Thunderbolt. You plug it in, plug in the power, and this display becomes the hub for all your connectivity.
Right.
Which is awesome because you can leave all your stuff connected to that display. You unplug power and this one cable, and you can pick your machine wherever you want.
And it's only a matter of time before they start just coming out with hubs that have all of that, docks that have those kind of things.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just so easy now.
Definitely. Well, and that's the promise of Thunderbolt. You can go and have all that connectivity underneath one single
port.
Connector. Yeah.
Right, which is very nice.
Yeah.
And it's so compact that they're able to do it in the Air.
Yeah.
And that's what makes sense now.
Because if you look, I mean, it's even smaller than a USB connector. It's tiny.
Oh, yeah. Much smaller.
It's really, really tiny. And so that's just an awesome solution for a lot of people because you want to have a desktop setup and you want to have external peripherals, especially if you're making the sacrifice with an SSD.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with because the MacBook Airs, they bumped up the storage, but still the lower end is still at 64, you know, gigs of storage for the low end 11.
Now,
so it's still pretty small.
Do you think since, you know, they got rid of the base model MacBook for the Air, which Totally makes sense.
Yeah, and just for comparison, that cost $9.99, which is the same price as the low-end MacBook Air. And for a lot of people, they probably, especially with iCloud coming up, they probably don't need that.
I mean, what's
storage.
What's the hard drive in the $9.99 at 60 gigs?
On the MacBook Air?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's 64 gigs, and it comes with small. It's really – I mean, it is small.
It's a very small hard drive.
I agree, and especially if you have any kind of if you have any kind of
– Media.
Media, yeah. iTunes, iPhone, that kind of stuff. It's very small. It also comes based with 2 gigs of RAM.
Google Music.
Yeah, or you know, iCloud if you want to download stuff on a per-use basis, or Spotify, or any of that stuff. But if you bump it up to the next model up, it's 128, SSD hard drive, and then 4 gigs of RAM. That's the one thing that bugs me. Going with the 2 gigs of RAM bugs me, especially with Lion. I feel like they should have gone and put 4 across the board.
Yeah, but it makes. I mean, they went price point. I mean, they really just went price. It's a cost thing, 100%. It's
definitely
a cost thing.
But if they're getting rid,
they wanted to get down to that price point, and instead of sacrificing the internals of the machine, they said, okay, we'll only give the RAM. Although the RAM is soldered in.
It is. The drive is not, though, correct?
No, right.
The drive is replaceable. But, I mean, not easily, but it can be done.
Actually, it looked pretty easy.
Really?
Yeah, it looked at tear down.
And once you rip it apart,
It's the first, it's not, you don't have to go another layer. You remove the back and it's right there. You unscrew it.
Oh, that's nice. Where was it on the previous generation?
I don't remember. I did look at a teardown once, but yeah, to replace this, I mean, getting one is probably more difficult than replacing it. But, but to replace it looked very easy. I was shocked. I didn't think that they would be easily replaceable. But maybe they've had problems and they have to replace them, you know, through Apple.
That's true.
And so they make
Genius
it easy
bar,
for themselves.
Yeah.
You know, which makes sense.
Definitely.
Yeah, I totally get that. Do you think, speaking of these machines, do you think the Air is going to be the form factor for all the MacBook line? Do you think they're going to do an Air Pro or anything like that? Or do you think people still need a pro level that has multiple ports built in? Like, where do you I'm not sure.
Yes and yes, to be honest. I think there are, you know, high-end use cases where people go and do need all that kind of connectivity built in. I feel like
Do you really need it built in? Let's say there's an adapter that has FireWire, USB, and whatever, and it's one little adapter that goes into Thunderbolt. Why do you need
– Some users, let's say if you're a video editing professional, I think you don't want to have to go and carry around an extra dongle. You know, I think certain things like the 17-inch, for example, 17-inch MacBook Pro.
Yeah, I guess screen size, then why at the point it doesn't have to be Air?
That seems very, very specialized.
Yeah, yeah.
Like if you're going to get the 17-inch, then you have the room, so why not do it? Do I think the MacBook Air form factor is going to take everything else, and I think the 15-inch is up next? Absolutely, because the truth is people like it.
Right.
It sells because people like it. People, you know, are buying them. I mean, it's been a great seller for them.
That's true.
And if there's something about it that just seems really, really easy, and I think with the aggressive push, I mean – they're obviously getting rid – we'll talk about the Mac Mini in a second, but they're pushing aggressively to get rid of optical drives.
Right.
You know, and the truth is how often do you really use a CD drive, DVD
Not
drive?
Not anymore.
Especially
it has gotten to the point – I believe it's at that point now where they're not necessary.
Yeah.
At all.
And especially since they've moved everything to the Mac App Store, including their own system software, all their software is going to be through the Mac App Store.
You know what? I have to take that back a little bit. It's not that they're not – they're still necessary, I guess, if you are burning a DVD per se, to play or something like that. But, you know, is it necessary to be built in is the question. And no.
Yeah,
because if you are going to do that, you can get an external one. They're not expensive. You know, I bought one for my machine for like $80.
Yeah. And it used to be
MS Office is downloadable, and Adobe is now all downloadable. Everything is downloadable.
Yeah.
And Jared, Adobe's downloadable. CS or just Photoshop?
I know you can do Photoshop for sure.
I know Photoshop 100%, but maybe the whole Creative Suite's not downloadable. No, it is. It absolutely is. It's huge. It's huge, and Office is downloadable from Microsoft.com.
Definitely,
I know for a fact I've done it.
And I don't even, you know.
Are huge.
Amazon
files.
Also has a
Office. Download store.
I don't know if they have Creative Suite though.
I'm not sure. I mean, yeah, they are huge. Yes, these are huge files. But if push came to shove and you didn't have a drive and you needed to get these programs on, you can.
And also, I mean, even to a more important point. If Adobe Creative Suite is the only reason why people need, you know, an optical drive for a one-use only purpose to install software,
well,
you know,
it is.
You don't need an optical drive in day-to-day use. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and you think about it though, like this Lion upgrade. You know, it's 4 gigs. Mm-hmm. That is big.
Oh, definitely.
You know what I mean? You need – it's a huge file.
And you need – and even DSL kind of gets dicey with that.
What do you – you don't need a disk for that. You need a little thumb USB drive.
Which they're selling in August.
Which cost nothing nowadays. And they're going to sell them and – that's how you're going to get your software. That's how you should be getting your software now.
Yeah. Well, I think everything you should get it download. I think if you need a fallback, it will be like a USB drive.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, to download that – if you don't have a nice fast connection, that 4 gig download
can take a while.
Brutal.
And they are letting you go and bring in your computer to an Apple store to download it with their Wi-Fi network.
And you know, it's like these thumb drives, as Jared just pointed out, one of our listeners in chat, said, you know, they're less packaging. They're tiny. They're tiny little things. They included them with the last Airs.
Right,
with the OS on them.
Do they have them in the new Airs?
No,
they don't have they don't have the thumb drive.
There's nothing in there.
Okay,
kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's an Air gun. I think it's for $69 or $79. They're gonna be able to
buy it in the store.
Buy Lion at the Apple store on a thumb drive.
It's good that they're allowing you to do that because also is now I did actually. You know, we'll get into that in a minute.
Okay,
we're on hardware. We're still on hardware. I'm jumping.
There's a lot to talk about, and it's all interconnected. So it's to be honest. And just to go and run down the, let me just run down the specs real quick of the of those Airs.
Sure.
So basically, there's the $999 entry point model. We said that's 2 gigs of RAM with a 64 gig hard drive, and then both 11 inches are running a 1.6 gigahertz dual core i5. Right. If you want to get dorky, the i5s, these mobile i5s have multi-threading supported. So basically it runs virtually as 4 cores, which is part of why they're speccing so well against previous gens. And also for the 13-inch, it's $1,299 and $1,599. Both of those come with 4 gigs of RAM and 128 or 256 with the flash drive, which is nice because that maxed out $1,599. That one feels like you can actually go – a real user can take that machine and have it replace a 15-inch MacBook Pro.
Absolutely.
Done.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
Which is what if I had the coin, that's what I would want to get. It's nice. Yeah. It's nice. We both got to play with them early in the week, and they're really, really nice machines. And
they're nice.
And we'll talk about this in a second, but Lion is so clearly designed for portables like this.
Yes, definitely.
I mean, it works beautifully. Like all the gestures, it just works great.
Definitely.
With that, from that form factor.
True. So the other device...
The Mac Mini.
The Mac Mini got refreshed also. Not hugely not hugely different.
Hugely.
Not radically different, to coin another phrase. Not radically different, but some really nice upgraded bumps.
Well, there was one radical difference. No optical drives.
Yeah, that's true.
Which –
at all.
Yeah, which is strange because a lot of people, I feel like, you have one, an older Mac Mini, as your kind of home media center.
I do. Yes.
So in terms of like ripping DVDs or ripping CDs, that's, that was weird to me.
They're just going to, first of all, we don't want you to do that because we want you to go to the iTunes store and buy the movies or TV shows, obviously.
Yeah.
But it comes with a Thunderbolt port. And now, the Thunderbolt stuff is new, but I'll tell you this, as soon as these products start coming out, then it makes sense because if you're getting an external DVD burner with Thunderbolt, it's just as good as having an internal.
Yeah.
No difference. I mean except space-wise, but still, you're not going to use it that much.
That's the great thing about Thunderbolts. I don't know if we've talked about it on the show before, but if you would always plug in a drive, let's say you had a Mac Pro and you plug in a drive into your tower, it'd be connected to something called ESATA,
right?
And that basically is like the fastest way you can go and connect to a peripheral to your computer.
Right.
Thunderbolt basically is like doing that over a cable. It's faster than USB. It's faster than USB 3. It's faster than FireWire 800. It's just
faster than everything.
Yeah,
lot faster.
Yeah, and you can daisy chain all this stuff, and it can drive video. So it is.
And
really,
it's backward
really,
compatible with FireWire and USB.
Yeah.
So that's the crazy thing.
And Ethernet. Like the fact that there's one connector that can run my monitor, my internet, Ethernet connection, all this stuff, it's the future. It's one of those things you're like, oh, cool, we're living in the future
now. This is the logical step of USB.
Or of connectivity.
Universal serial bus, that was the whole point of a USB connector, was to have a one standardized connector for everything. So this makes sense. They're even one-upping it by making an Ethernet connectivity.
Right.
Which actually you can – with USB, you can connect – you can have Ethernet connections. They do it on the Air where there's an adapter.
Air. Yeah, exactly.
And I do it off my phone when I want to tether over USB. That connectivity is just not the fastest in the world, but it's fast.
Why do you think, and this is a little bit of a tangent, because I don't know a lot of the history in terms of USB. Why has it taken them so long to iterate? Because that was the promise initially. And they started, I mean, the standard was very, very, very slow in the beginning, but they've reiterated a couple times now. Why have they not, why they haven't gotten there faster?
Going to two was their big step. Mm-hmm. Like when it went from USB 1.0 to USB 2, it was a big explosion. And it was kind of like, I think the hardware manufacturers were still hesitant at the 1.0 stage. And, you know, by the time it was 2 and 2 was backward compatible with 1, that was the key, every device was USB. And every device came out as USB and nobody had any thought of not to do USB. So going from 2 to 3, it was a standard thing. It was there's so many people involved. There's so many companies involved in making the standard official. Right. I think it just get caught in bureaucratic red tape crap.
Got it.
I really think that's what it was. Now, the reason Thunderbolt, I think, you know, it was made by Intel. Yeah,
Intel and Apple. Intel owns the patents.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not this huge consortium of companies.
Right.
You know, so, but if it gets adopted, then there will be a standard created and then it will turn into the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's just when you get that many companies involved, it sucks. It does, man. You know, once you get into that bureaucratic realm, you know, everyone has to compromise over certain things and it takes forever to get the standard out.
And it's very curious about Thunderbolt. Lightpeak was the working name, correct?
Right.
Is it
Lightpeak?
Well, Sony is introducing it on some of their laptops, but they're using a USB connector.
Yes,
you're already seeing this fragmentation. I wonder how that's going to play out.
I was curious about that. I mean, I guess why not? I mean, it doesn't – as long as it's the same standard, I don't know.
I feel like I wonder if it is an issue of them not wanting to go and license certain technologies. You know what I mean? If they roll their own
connector. I am curious. I mean, I know why Apple did it in that form factor because of the displays and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, but I wonder if it makes more sense to have it be the USB plug, because obviously the USB, if you have an adapter, is backward compatible to Thunderbolt.
Right.
You'd be able to, if you had an adapter, it would work, you know? So technically you would be able to create a monitor with a USB input that is Thunderbolt.
But then if you bought a new computer, you'd have to buy an adapter for that versus
– you would have to be an adapter for the older ones, but everything newer and other USB. I'm curious. Like, I mean, I get why Apple did it because of their legacy products, monitors and all that stuff.
And because most people are probably going to be adopting it. And there's also something about it too, where if they set it up as a display
– Now, but you know what Apple may do. They may do both. I don't see Apple getting rid of USB. So if they have the chipset inside already and they have the Thunderbolt port and then a USB port that is Thunderbolt and USB 3 also, why not?
But they haven't adopted USB 3. They're still at 2. They're not adopting USB 3, which is very interesting.
Well, they are. I mean, but USB 3 works over Thunderbolt.
No, what I'm saying as far as like, you know, the USB
saying, like,
ports on their machines
the same,
are 3.
You know.
Yeah.
But I think those USB ports are just going to turn into USB-sized Thunderbolt ports. Along with the other Thunderbolt port. It would make sense for them to do that because they have a lot of legacy USB printers and all that stuff.
Right, because if they're going to have USB already, why not go and...
Right, they won't say we have USB 3.0, but it will work in that slot.
Yeah. I do get why they did that with the monitor thing makes sense because you do have, for users, right? You know, you don't have people see like, what's this new thing? You don't have to worry about it. It's just kind of like you said.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, and that's going to be the first like...
And monitors are expensive. Those are probably going to be the first peripherals that will take off with
it. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
And it will work currently with all the ones they have. You know, and thank God they're not releasing another adapter.
Seriously, I have
– that actually made me so happy.
On my computer, I used to have a box of – I mean, literally it was like 4 or 5 different monitor adapters. Every time I'd switch a computer, you need to go and get 1 or 2 adapters and daisy chain them.
Yeah, horrible, horrible.
Yeah, terrible.
This is the first time they refreshed and changed the monitors and it's the same connector. It's kind of nice. So the minis – we were in the mini conversation.
Yes, and in terms of spec-wise,
they bumped up the processors.
And the cheapest one got $100 cheaper because now they start at $599. And they started at $699 before.
They did.
But basically, the 2.3 gigahertz, once again, you know, dual-core Intel i5. And that comes with, you know, 2 gigs of RAM again. Okay.
But RAM very easily replaceable in the minis.
Very, 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 very.
And those
have that thing where they just unscrew in the bottom.
Unscrew the bottom, cool. Pop it out. Simple.
Yeah.
No big deal.
And once again, you go to any third party, although they've changed, actually Apple's been, they used to go and charge a huge, enormous markup on their RAM.
They still do.
But relative to what it used to be, it's not as much better. It used to be ridiculous.
It's still kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it's got, this isn't new, but it has the HDMI out, which was in the last refresh of the minis. And what is the other thing? Oh, on the server. So there's three, right? Three versions.
Right. There's the two main ones. And they used to have a server that was the server one didn't have an optical drive before. None of them have the optical drive.
So now the server one, though, is some amazing specs. If you've looked at it, quad core.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Quad core machine, two hard drives inside, two 500 gig hard drives, Lion server. It's nice.
And I read that the form factor actually is a 1U rack space.
Oh.
So I wonder if people can use these, you know, as rackable units.
Well, I'm going to have to find out.
And this is so great, especially now with Lion server being, you know, you were talking about that before. It seemed like it was a nice update and download.
Yeah.
If you do need to go and set up a home media server, nice machine.
Yes.
Like really nice machine.
Very nice machine. Very, very, very nice machine. I'm tempted to get one to replace the mini I currently have.
Oh, you know, I did not realize they were quad core. That is great. They'll start at $999 for the server one.
That's what I'm saying. Like a quad core server, little server machine for a small business.
In that size?
It's brilliant.
Now,
even a medium-sized business, it's brilliant.
Yeah. Now, how are the drives configured? Is it just two drives?
Two drives.
Okay.
They're two separate. You can reformat and then, you know, like mirror them or RAID them, but they come as two separate.
Discrete drives, okay.
Two discrete drives. Usually, like I've set them up for some clients of mine in the past, and I've set it up as like either I'll reformat and mirror them if they want, or one will be the OS drive and another will be their file storage, you know, which kind of surprises me that they didn't go that route and do a small SSD as the OS drive and then a bigger drive as, you know, because they're doing that on the iMacs.
Yeah, you know, there's that space for it. Yeah.
No, I mean, like you can get the iMacs with that configuration now.
Yeah, like there's two bays inside. Yeah.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. Like a small, like a 60 gig SSD for one, and then a terabyte drive for everything else.
Yeah, that's weird. I wonder why they didn't do that.
Because it speeds up the machine, and I mean, I guess I don't know, but
I mean, it's a price point thing. So they did that. It
could be,
but if they did it as a build to order, like why not?
Yeah, I'm not sure, but they are, you know, it was a nice refresh, and all of these were refreshed with the big daddy of them all, the OS Lion.
Lion, finally.
Roar. Yep, I did it.
Wait, can you do that again so I'm not talking so I can sample it and make it my ringtone?
Roar.
It's not okay. It's never okay, but it's really not okay.
You know,
right
did you
now.
Notice that I had to actually like do a hand movement?
Yeah, there was a whole hand gesticulation thing. Oh, you know what? You can, Mac Mini, you can configure with solid state drives. You can configure it up
What's
to
the configuration?
Basically, you can do the two 500s normally.
Right.
These are all 7200 drives, which is nice.
Right, which is also very nice.
You can do two 750s. You can do one 256. You can do one 750, you know, regular, and then one 256 solid state, or two 256 solid states for 500 gigs of solid state. State storage, which would smoke.
That would smoke. But just that's a killer to me for a server. That's a killer configuration. The 250,
because you want your OS
and a 750.
Yeah,
you completely separate the OS from your file storage. That thing is gonna fly. It's gonna fly.
It will cost you.
It will cost
turn this $1,000 machine into a $2,000 machine like that. But
it will fly. That's the thing when you don't store your files on the same drive as your OS,
yeah.
It keeps it clean and lean and fast because the OS uses, when it gets full, the OS slows down.
Yeah.
When your main drive gets full. So this way it never gets full.
Yeah. That's nice.
So nice.
That's going to be very nice.
Wow. Yeah. I can't wait to set one of those up. Yeah.
All these do have integrated graphics, which you would expect, I guess, given the size and everything, which isn't fantastic. But
you know what, though? For what people are using these for,
exactly.
It makes sense.
Exactly. No one's going to be taking like a super gaming rig off of their
Mac.
No,
that's
Mac
not what it's
Mini
for. That's
Mac
not what it's for.
Yeah.
That's not what it's for at all. You know?
But going back to Line. Now, you had played with it before. I hadn't really played with it before. What are your thoughts? Let's recap.
Pretty much the same as before. There hasn't been much different in what I've used to what is out. I really like Lion. I like Mission Control. I like the Launchpad. I love Launchpad, actually. I think that's one of my favorite things on there. I think it's fantastic. One thing that the scrolling. Mm-hmm. And you can change it, it's fine, but the default scrolling on a mouse with a ball
or a scroll wheel
or whatever. Or
touch thing on a mouse or anything.
Is reversed. Now, on a trackpad or a touch screen, it makes complete sense. And not that you wouldn't get used to it if you used it the other way, but it doesn't make any sense unless you're using a trackpad or touchscreen. There's nothing logical about it.
Yeah. It's,
it's weird.
Well, if you ever notice, if you use an iPad basically and you want to go and move the content on your screen down, you touch it and you pull down because you're actually touching the thing. And
it makes
computers,
sense.
And you never think about it because we've all been kind of using, you know, a scroll wheel comes out in your mouse and you start using it and you just never think about it. And that way it actually works the opposite way where computer works more like you're adjusting the frame that's looking at the content versus the content itself, if that makes sense.
Right. Well, it's mapping your movement to what you're – just like a mouse does, you know. Like you're moving a mouse to see like that, up, down, left, right.
Scott is moving his hands right now. It's kind of amazing.
You know, like if you took the mouse and turned it up to like what the screen would be, scrolling down would scroll down, up would scroll up.
You're looking really funny right now. Jared has a good point about launch pad. We're going to get that in a second. It's interesting the whole – and a lot of people are really, really like you basically fundamentally change something like that that's kind of, you know, in people's, you know, muscle memory. People are going
to
go and
react. You do get used to it.
I mean. It's weird. When I started – when I first got the iPad and I first kind of used it really, really hard that first week. This is last year, right? And I sat down on my computer. I started using the scroll on my mouse, what Apple's now calling natural scrolling. I was using the inverse for the computer because I wanted it to work like the iPad.
Right.
And after a while, you get used to working it both ways. One thing I'll say about Lion is that it is definitely designed and made. All the features across the board, I think, are designed for a trackpad. It is not something that is thought of. They're going to a trackpad. They're going to touch. They're going to gestures. It's not going to be – that's not – mouse or mice is not where they see stuff going. As a test for myself, I changed – I installed Lion and I basically was running Snow Leopard with regular scrolling, the computer at work with regular scrolling, and then Lion with the, you know, inverted natural scrolling, whatever. It was driving me crazy. So I actually switched on all my computers just to see how it would, you know, would work.
And you got used to it.
Well, here's what's really interesting about it is that there's been a lot of talk about the iOSification of Lion,
right,
of Mac OS and bringing features in.
Yeah.
And obviously, it's very clear there are lots of, you know, visual cues and lots of stuff that's happening. And people are pointing to this one as one of those things. I don't think it's that cut and dry. What I think is going on is we're used to going and using our computers as an abstraction of our data. You know what I mean? Like you have these computer tools that you're using and it affects the stuff in the screen and that changes with the tablet devices, right? Where you're actually directly affecting your data. You're moving – it's not an abstraction. It's the actual, you know, file you're moving and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where interaction with OS is going, or at least that's where Apple is betting it's going. And I mean, and I think this is kind of like attacking that from the other side. You know, iOS is doing it from one side. This is doing it from the desktop. Because you think about – like Minority Report, right? That's the holy grail of interface. Everybody likes, yeah, right?
Absolutely.
Where if you want to go and move an object, you go and move it in the direction you're going. Where it's that thing. It's like you're attacking. You're manipulating the data. You're not manipulating a computer window that has the data within it.
Sure, sure.
And when you use that's like I was using this like the second or third day I was using Lion, and I kind of said, oh wait a second, that's what clicked in my head. Where it's like if I want to go and move a page, I'm actually interacting with the page,
mm-hmm,
where I'm not manipulating the window that houses the page.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because that's what normally works with scroll bars, particularly.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
And when you lose scroll bars as that visual cue, it makes it all about the content. Because that's another thing that's with Lion. Scroll bars are gone, which I don't know if I love because there's no indicator. Well, they pop up, but.
Right. And you can enable them to be there all the time.
Can you?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is in the system preferences.
Gotcha. So basically, what they did is like, if you look at any computer, you have that scroll bar on the right and at the bottom. If there's room, you know, to left and forth.
And I don't, you know, to be honest, I get it. I get a lot of these things, but I like to know where I am on the page. Sometimes
that's how I feel too.
they were not thinking of that. Like I would like a marker. I don't care if it's a scroll bar or what. I want to know if there's more stuff down there.
Well, that's the thing.
How do you know? You don't know.
When you launch, you can set a bunch of different preferences for how it like registers stuff. And like when it launches a window or a window opens up that has more content, the scroll bars will flash up even if you don't have them permanently enabled so you can know. But I'm with you. Like where I'd like to get a sense if there's more content I'm not seeing so I can know versus having to go and interact with it to know.
Right, right.
Which I don't know why there's not some sort of – I mean they could easily do it even with a page roll, you know, like you know, graphic at the bottom of the page, so you know there's something else there waiting for you. There has to be something.
Something. You would think. I don't know. I mean, it doesn't. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It doesn't have to be that scroll bar.
There can be.
They
want to
get rid
different.
Of it. That's fine.
And like, I think, I don't know what I think. Cause like, it's, you know what I mean? It's one of those things like, do you like it or not? Like,
yeah. What are your other thoughts online in general? Like,
One thing, it actually seems faster to me on the same computer than Snow Leopard, which was surprising to me. And I don't know if that's simply a function of animation.
I actually noticed the.
Well, it depends. Have you waited for Spotlight? Basically, when you load it up, Spotlight does a ton of churning, and that slows stuff down for a long time. But once that's done, for me, it seemed faster. But okay. I think – I don't know if it's
slower on one of the machines.
Yeah, I don't know if it's actually faster or if it's a function of animations making it feel faster.
Could be. Could be. Yeah. And those animations are nice.
Yeah. And it's like that visual cue thing that they do really, really well.
Yeah, totally.
There's a lot I like about it. There are some things I feel like it's not quite – I'm probably going to I have it installed on an external drive. I'm probably going to go and put it on my main drive soon just because I can't not do that.
Right.
There's lots of it I like about it. There are a lot of disparate elements that don't feel like they're cohesively put together yet, like Launchpad and gestures and that kind of stuff and full screen apps, right? I love the idea of full screen apps. I love the idea about, having these full screen apps and then using four fingers to swipe between them and whatnot. It's fast. Like, if I'm working stuff, I know where stuff is. I can get between other things really quickly. I can also do like the command tab shortcut, which is great. And once you start doing that, having the whole,
fluid.
And when you make stuff full screen, it takes away the menu bar at the top. And going back to the old school feels a little bit archaic. In comparison.
Interesting.
And I like that unto itself, right? Going back to the old version, it feels awkward and clunky with like the dock and everything. I like Launchpad, but having to go and hit a button to go to Launchpad and then like find an app, that seems weird. What I noticed, this is one of those other like epiphanies the other night, I was going through here and I had a bunch of full screen apps and I was like, I need to get something else. So I was like going back and forth with my four fingers. Then I pinched to go to Launchpad. It launched the app right there. And then it was like, oh, that's what this is all about. Right. It's they couldn't go and make it default by practice. The apps aren't there yet. People use their computers the old school way still too much. But a world where most of our apps are full screen by default, and you basically go and you are moving between your apps with your four fingers. You go and do that pinch thing to bring up Launchpad. You find your stuff there.
What does that remind you of?
Oh, it's like it's iOS.
But what else does it remind you of?
Reminds me of the iPad gestures that they had enabled by as a developer.
It kind of reminds me of the HP.
Oh, the touchpad? Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. A little bit.
Conceptually, it reminds me of that.
But you know what it does better than the HP thing? It doesn't have that problem where it stacks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where the window actually becomes the whole app, which interacts better with how we're already used to working with computers.
And the other big thing about, this goes to the same thing as the scrolling, is being able to know what you're working on.
Yeah.
They have to figure out a way to do it. I don't care if it's a little box at the top that shows you, what you're dealing with. I'm sorry, but if I have 10 things open or five, let's say even actually it's – if it's less, it's more – it makes more sense. If I have five things open, I got to remember that I'm working on five things. If I'm multitasking, the great thing about multitasking is you can look and visually cue yourself of what you're working on.
Right. And you need to remember what's open and where. And that's the one thing with full screen apps. It basically is – I believe it just works in order of what has been full screened last. And that's where Mission Control comes in theory, right? Where if you basically have all this stuff open, if you want to jump to something right away, you can do that. I like the swiping better, but it doesn't work if you've got lots of stuff open.
Right. I mean, that's kind of why –
I'm still playing with Mission Control. I'm not sure what I think about it yet because I used Spaces for a little bit of time and I never really used Expose. So I'm kind of feeling that out still.
Yeah. I mean, that's – one thing on Windows that I really like is the taskbar, especially in Windows 7, because everything is full screen in Windows if you want it to be, except for the taskbar. And it doesn't go under it. It full screens to it. And so you always know what you have open and what you're working on. It takes up screen space, but it's really
– Well, so the dock works the same way in the traditional Mac OS.
Except you can end up under the dock and you can when you go – if you go full screen
– full screen takes the dock away.
I mean if you go as big as you could get without full screen mode, you could still move it underneath the dock.
Manually if you want to.
On Windows, you can't. If you're in the biggest setting, it's locked full screen for the bar at the bottom.
Gotcha.
That's the difference in that.
Yeah. I almost feel like they need to go and allow the dock to go and come back if you go full screen. Because right now you can, and let's say you're not running full screen, you can go and set the dock to hide.
Right, which you've always been able to do.
Yeah,
which
but is like nice. When you go full screen, you, oh, wait a second. Guys, running Logic 9, it has a full screen button here. I did not know.
Oh, look at that.
We just went full screen with Logic.
That's very cool.
I didn't know it. Well, this is probably, this is a question. Do apps have to be rewritten to support full screen, or is it built into the windowing system?
Well, I don't know. No, they have to. They have to because the company I work for, we have our proprietary software, and it doesn't go full screen.
I didn't think this had been updated. I guess it had been. It's a little clunky. I'm not loving the way it's working 100%. But
interesting.
I didn't know that button was there. Oh, look what this did. This got wonky here because now we can't. You know what I mean? It did it. We
right.
can't go and
I see.
I need to go and nothing to grab on and move it down. Well, we'll deal with this later, but
yeah, whatever. That's funny.
But even if you go, let's say you have, you know, mail open and you go full screen, right? You can't go and bring that dock back, which would be good to have some sort of visual cue. And especially, like you said, if you're going left to right, you want to know what's there. At least it's some sort of pop-up, you know, and that seems, it seems weird. It seems, once again, it seems different elements that are cool, but they're not put together yet.
Yeah.
And I wonder if some of this stuff is just to get people comfortable and used to it, maybe to see how they're going to use it.
Mm-hmm. Could be. And, you know, it looks like this same, you know, that little preview of Windows 8 that came out looked like it had a similar thing, you know.
With the full screen mode?
Yeah. So, maybe, I mean, that looks like it's the way it's going, but.
All right, now I'm going to go and check and see if I set the dock to hide, if it'll come back in full screen mode.
Oh, I'm curious. Yes, we test. Yeah. We test as we record. We are very adventurous people here at Tech Bacon.
Yeah, hopefully this isn't. Are we still broadcasting? Everything fine?
Yeah, although my battery is like dying. Oh, I didn't bring the.
Oh no! Why we haven't done this before?
I know. Well, we have 22 minutes left on my battery. So if the live show goes out after 22 minutes, sorry guys,
that's the reason why
is what it is.
You know, doc does. If you set doc to hide, it does not come back when you go on the full screen. And also visual cues. There's a lot of visual redesign. A lot of color has gone out of the interface. They've made things a lot more monochrome.
Yeah, I like it. It's nice. They like the linen background.
Which I like. I'm not going to complain, but I think it's really, really nice. It's in iOS 5. I think it's pretty. Yeah.
Before I forget.
Yeah.
Just the, when setting up a new machine that has the migration assistant in the beginning.
Oh, yes.
Has a new feature that is kind of crazy. Oh, God, really? I sounded so excited about that, but kind of crazy. It is it has migrate from another computer, migrate from a disk or Time Machine backup, or migrate from Windows, built in to the migration assistant.
Once you saw it, I'm like, that hasn't, you know, you would think it should have been there before, because before you had to take your computer down and have the genius guys do it by hand.
Yep, it was never there. And so now there's a little exe file you can download from Apple to put on your PC. You launch that on your PC, you do this on the Mac, pulls all your stuff over.
Cool. Have you tried it yet? Do you know?
No, I haven't tried it yet.
Do you know what stuff
it's
supposed to bring over?
I'm assuming there's been third-party cables and programs like this in the past, and what they've done, and I'm going to assume it's going to be similar, is they would migrate. It would do your bookmarks, your desktop, your documents, your pictures. Anything in your My Pictures folder would go into iPhoto. Anything in your My Music folder would go into iTunes. And then they would take all your mail from Outlook and translate it into Apple Mail.
That is cool.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm assuming this is going to do the same thing.
That's very cool.
Yeah, it was really neat. It's a very cool feature.
Yeah.
I can't wait to try it.
They make it easy. It's so smart.
Very smart.
Yeah.
Very smart. Very smart to have it built in like that.
And, you know, going back to OS X real quick, you know, they redid Mail, they redid Safari. Safari feels so much faster.
Yeah,
Safari was getting unusable for me. I switched to Chrome Prime Time, and like, you know, although I still have the unified search bar, the speed of Safari is kind of beckoning me a little bit. So I'd like to have the integration with my phone contacts and bookmarks. Sure. The one thing that everybody's been talking about, and I think we'll probably all agree on this, the new calendar looks like butt.
Yeah.
They basically decided to make it look
iPad
like
calendar.
But they made it to look like a real calendar with this little faux leather thing and in stitching at the top. And like, I get it, but I'm okay with the computer window around it too.
When you click the calendar button, it's just like iOS, right?
Oh yeah, it's with the popovers and everything. Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm fine with, actually. That works for me, because before it was always it was a bar always. Yeah, but they're like tick buttons. So it was one more click. I guess
it's kind of nice if you're going between calendars a lot, but at the end of the day, not a huge difference.
Can you not bring a sidebar back on it?
I don't think
so. You could reduce. I would always reduce the sidebar.
I don't think you can.
That is silly.
I know, right? But
It's you know, it's this big push to modal and full screen. I mean, obviously they've, you know, I wonder how it is for you and I.
You know what I would love to see for one of us to try, or both of us to try actually, is to take a day of use and actually do everything full screen and just use Launchpad. Curious how easy it would be to use.
I bet you it would be easy on a trackpad, really hard on a mouse.
But I also wonder, like,
because what do? You invoke it via the application in the dock, or do you use keyboard shortcuts? You'd have to use keyboard shortcuts.
Keyboard shortcuts. Or well, you probably could assign one of the mouse clicks.
Yeah, to bring it.
Actually, I know you can.
Okay.
So you could, you know, it could be double click on the mouse is or whatever. You know, yeah. Because you can assign right, left, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Something like that. But you I'm curious. I would like to know. I think in general the use would be with trackpad. I think would be great. But just knowing what you're working on, like we talked about, I want to know how difficult that is, or is it just in my head?
I think. I mean, it's learned. I mean, all this stuff is learned behavior, of course. But it's
remembering.
It's well, also it is conceptual differences. Like that's why it didn't work for me because I did it. I did it at work. So I'm like, you know, I'm at work on my XP machine with Excel with the scrolling now reversed, and it only works when you make that mental switch between.
Because I do have to say, am I changing
the window or am I changing the content? You know what I mean?
Right.
And you have to, whenever you slip up, you think about that. It's like, oh, man, I'm pushing the content up. But like it's after like a day, it's rapidly becoming second nature. I got the trackpad basically to try lines because it seemed like it was so geared for a touchpad. And I wanted to kind of go and give it a fair shot with all this new stuff to see how it would work.
Mm-hmm.
The gesture stuff, the trackpad on Snow Leopard to me, like why bother? Because there's no real benefit.
Well,
to
you
me.
Know, also, I mean, computer interface interaction, trackpad, great. Swiping, zooming, clicking, scrolling, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But real precise movement, you can't do it with a trackpad.
Yeah.
I've tried. Like you cannot be in Photoshop on a trackpad. It just doesn't work.
Yeah.
You need precise movement, whether it be a mouse or a stylus or your finger, whatever it may be. It doesn't work for that. So you can't – I mean, yes, you can start having that be the default. I mean, maybe that's what it'll do. It'll switch to be the trackpad's the default and the mouse is the option.
Well, it's almost like, too, the angle of it isn't conducive to that kind of precision. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's very difficult to be precise like that. Oh, boy. My battery is going fast here.
sorry in advance, guys, when we drop off. We're just gonna keep it going to the wall and we'll just disappear.
Yeah. Big difference when opening Word 11, our user Jared is saying. Faster, Mr. Jared. I'm curious. I mean, I think I notice stuff popping up quick
in line,
and especially if you don't, which you don't have to now, close the applications.
And this is another thing because we talked about restore.
Oh, versioning.
Have you played with it yet?
Yeah,
yeah. It works as it's versioning is that thing we talked about where it auto saves stuff and you can go back in time to get stuff. You don't have to save anything. It works so well. It creeped me out.
Yeah, and there is no save as anymore.
Right.
Save as is gone. Now, the only time that comes into issue is if you actually want to save another copy because you actually want to not go back to a version but have two versions.
Exactly.
You know, and so instead of save as, they have export and you have to actually export as.
Well, I think that actually doesn't do it as the native document type. I'm looking at text editor right now.
Or duplicate.
Duplicate. So
not export. You have to duplicate it. And then you have two versions of the file.
Oh, so that's interesting. They're changing the terminology, so you're not thinking about save.
Which is fine. Which, because you do need to do that. Sometimes you actually want two versions of the file, not just a past version
to see if
you made changes.
Yeah,
you know? And so they have duplicate now, which you just saw it works. It's cool. It's neat.
But that is a very Apple thing to do, to go and change the name of the function so you stop thinking about save. Because you actually, Apple S does not do anything now.
Right.
Like, I mean, I've been using, you know, Apple.
Well, there is no.
I mean, there's.
It's constantly saving. And when
it does do that, but it doesn't really do anything comparatively, you know.
Right. And when you want to go back to a different version of a file, you can go back to this versioning feature and it opens up a time machine style interface with just that file.
Yeah. It's really cool because
It is great.
You know, in all Mac Windows, you have the name of the document at the top of the window. And it'll say if you change stuff, it'll actually will say edited. So you know if you've done something for the last version, and you basically can click on that and you go, what does it actually say, Scott? No, it's not going to play nice. You basically go to browse all versions. This will pop down. It says lock, duplicate, browse all versions, and it basically opens Time Machine with the document. You can scroll back through all your different stuff.
I mean, it looks just like Time Machine, but just that file.
Yeah.
And it's really, really pretty and useful.
Yeah. But it is one of those things where I feel like it's going to take me time to get used to it because I'm so paranoid.
You know, I think I've gotten used to it because I've used Google Docs a bunch.
And
Google Docs is autosave, you know, and versioning. And so it doesn't take There's still a little paranoia.
Yeah.
But I noticed instead of now wanting to click, I just look to make sure it's saved. You know, like the instinctually click, save, click, save. Right, I just kind of look up or right and it says saved. I'm like, I feel fine.
And I guess you can still use Apple S to make sure that version of yours is saved.
Sure, you can.
But it's weird. Like, because I remember being, once again, go back to high school, right? High school, like journalism class, working on a layout and like, you know, in PageMaker.
And then losing everything.
Yeah, and an old SE30, right? And then everything goes down. And you're like, really? Really, guys?
I didn't save it till 6 hours ago.
Oh, it's 20 years.
You ever had that happen with like a big college paper?
Yeah.
That was the worst. I had that happen a couple times.
Well, we lived in the 90s. Of course we did. Of course I have.
It became the my dog ate my homework excuse.
It's insanity.
You know?
Oh, by the way, we apologize, guys. There's a we're hearing that there's the ads from Ustream. We're going to find a different solution for streaming moving forward.
Yeah, we're working on that.
Yeah, so we apologize for the ads. We're not happy either. And we'll get that rectified as soon as we can.
Yeah, so another feature is on the sidebar now, there's the all files shortcut.
Right.
And all files shows you everything on your computer.
What do you think? What do you think about this? I think there's a very specific reason they put this in there. What do you?
Well, they're trying to get rid of the file structure.
Yeah.
And I've never been a huge fan of that. Windows started doing that. Windows 7 now. If you go into the sidebar now, like you used to have shortcuts to your my documents and my music, it isn't that anymore. In 7, it started to be documents, pictures, videos. And it's not going to a folder. It's taking all documents, all pictures. Same thing as this. It's directing you outside of the file structure.
Right.
I like the file structure. Maybe I'm just stuck in my way. I'm always open to new things. And I'm a person that likes to explore. And I like change. I love when programs change. I love it. Everyone hates it and they freak out. I love it because I like to explore and find the new features and figure out how to use them best to my ability. Conceptually, I like file storage. I like placing things in a certain place and knowing where to go to get them. I don't want to remember to type the name of a file to find it. You know what I mean?
No, like, I'm with you.
I like to group things in certain categories. Now, a program like, say, iPhoto has albums, and you can do it that way. And they've gotten rid of file structure in that front. And I guess a program like Word or Pages can do the same thing. But there are times when you have – I think we've talked about this before, but there are times when you have a picture, a PDF, a JPEG, all in the same project that you're working on. Or you need file structure for that. There's no other way, as far as I can conceptualize, that you can do that.
And more importantly, you need a place to hide your porn.
Well, yeah. Exactly. I got to name it something else.
I know.
And know where to go and remember.
Exactly. It's supposed to be like a county fair song lyrics. I'm with you. I'm told, Jared, our listener Jared just wrote the same thing. I actually did not read the chat room when I said that. Should we think that at the same time? Because that is messed up and awesome. That's amazing. I'm with you. And once again, it is the way I've come to conceive of how you interact with computers, right?
Well, and you know what also, and I'll let you go on with that a little bit more, but it makes sense because it actually stems from the physical world. A file drawer and putting things away or in a basket or in whatever.
Well, and here's what I wonder, right?
Which we've been doing since the dawn of man.
Exactly. But we're talking about, you know, the desktop metaphor files folders that, you know, came out in 84, right? That was like the big leap forward.
Sure. Yeah.
We're talking about, is that outdated? If that goes away, we have been using that since 1984. So – Is that actually the best way to do stuff? Or I mean, like it's an ingrained analytic behavior at this point.
Even if you really think about it, even before that, because even before there were folders, the file structure of DOS technically
or
was
Unix or anything.
Is that structure? And it just seems like it's a human behavior thing, not ingrained. I think we work towards that because that's how human behavior thinks, that we want to pile things in a certain area to know where they are.
Well, I think it all depends right
now. You know
what
I mean?
I agree. Right now, I feel like it doesn't quite make sense yet because – and maybe this is – I'm trying to think about where the idea is that they're going
Where's it going?
If you have apps, like you said, if Pages works this way, if Photoshop works this way, if you know iTunes and you know and iPhoto work this way, and I can organize all my stuff within groups and categories and whatnot within those applications and they handle the database of it all.
Yeah.
That flies for me because it addresses the human factor of it. And I don't really need to go and worry about saving stuff on my desktop because I know it's in the application. That said, it's not there yet. And I don't know if I'll ever be completely okay with that, if I'll ever want that for my computer, my main
computer. You're okay with that on your iOS.
And I'm okay with it. Here's what makes me question it, because I'm okay with it for certain types of data. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with it with
for
media.
Photos.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so, and that's because I've been used to those applications that deal with it that way, right? Mm-hmm. Like it causes problems if you go and muck around in your iTunes library, to be honest. And I do it for the show, but it's like,
but
it's
it
a
does.
Pain.
Yeah.
If I have an application for word processing that is designed with that approach in mind, where it's easy and intuitive and makes sense, do I let that go eventually? I would think I would. Right mm-hmm. now I don't. And honestly, like Word ain't designed with that like that. Like, no. You know, I hide stuff in folders to confuse Word, to not mess my stuff up. You know what I mean? Like
to make sure
I'm covered.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I feel like I would eventually, but it's going to be a lot. It's like the saving thing. It's going to take a bit to get used to it.
You know what I almost
– And those apps aren't even out anyway. So.
Right. What I feel like is – and maybe it's a naive statement. I don't know. But I feel like everyone's trying to reinvent the computer experience because they feel they have to do something new and it's become stale. And sometimes – if it's not broke, you don't need to fix it. As in regards to like a file structure kind of things or folders.
I would
– you know, I feel like in 5 years, it's going to kind of go off the rails a little bit and then just going to come back to that.
Here's where I'll disagree. I do agree for a large subset of users it is fine as is, but – you know, you talk to somebody that's maybe not a big computer person and they want to go and save files in their thing. Mm-hmm. And I've somebody else on another podcast has said this. This isn't original, but I think it's true. Where do people always save stuff so they know where it is?
Right. On their desktop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Normal people don't want to have to bother with a file structure. They accept it because it's there.
You know what they do? I mean, yes, a lot of people just throw everything to the wall, to the file structure. But a lot of people on their desktop have folders. On their desktop, and they file stuff in folders on their desktop.
Right,
so you're always putting it in a folder.
I'm saying there's a need to go and organize different types of stuff, but I'm saying like if you organize that stuff within an application that housed it versus having individual files on a desktop or in a file structure in your hard drive, there's a need to organize. I don't know if there's a need
but
to go and
there's multiple,
have exact files.
You know, because it's multiple things. It's not all pictures or all – you know, that's what I was getting at before. You know, if you're working on something or working with – you know, a project that includes JPEGs and PDFs and Word docs and everything and Excel files that you want that all in one bin per se or one folder or one area. I mean, I guess they could create short smart folders, which they kind of already done.
Yeah.
You say this smart folder is it's tagged with this
project, but imagine like
project tags.
But imagine like, let's say, and this is not, I'm not suggesting this would be good or bad. I'm just spitballing ideas, right? Let's say you were, you know, we're working on the show, right? Okay. So we need to go and like get something up for the show. We need to create a new graphic. So I go into Photoshop and create a graphic. And then within Photoshop via some functionality that doesn't exist yet, I send it to, you know, an FTP, you know, or to Safari to go and get it uploaded to, you know, or Amazon, you know, mm-hmm. you know, S3. And if it was all functionality,
you know, what's interesting?
If you could do it, you know, if it was basically, if they approach it via function, you know, perception versus a physical file perception,
Have you used SharePoint at all?
No.
Similar to kind of what SharePoint does.
Yeah.
SharePoint has projects, and then you throw all your stuff in the project, and then you can access the project, and you have your files in that project. They're not. It's not a folder. It's all database based. It's all SQL based, I think.
Hmm.
So everything it's not a file storage system. So I guess if you translate that to the desktop experience, maybe that works.
Yeah. I don't know how you – because there are different things you want to go in and group it by type, you said. I mean there is like lots
of – I guess you can tag stuff. That's the only thing I can think of. Like if you're working in iPhoto or Picasso or whatever and you tag – you don't have to file them in an album. You can tag things as Disneyland and then you can pull up
all the Disneyland
stuff. Disneyland.
And that's what you do already, yeah.
So – but how, you know, is that much different than filing in a folder? You still have to type a thing. Even if it's outside of the box of that system, it's still that system.
Well,
you're just doing it in a different way.
Organization's still happening, yeah.
Right.
But I think where it comes in the problem is like I think we're people, regular people, not like us.
No.
You know, you sit down at a computer.
Regular folk.
And you look at your user folder and there's like, you know, applications and downloads and mm-hmm, library mm-hmm. and all this in line. The library folder's gone. You know, the user folder's gone. That's the first step towards this, right?
Yeah.
And all that kind of stuff. That just becomes really, really confusing. You need to go and learn something to even know what you can and can't do mm-hmm, in that world. Mm-hmm, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I think taking the – abstracting it and making – people know their applications and know how to, you know, do the tasks they want to do. But all that other stuff, it's like they shouldn't have to – I'm thinking the approach is they don't need to learn about computers just to go and, you know, do their work in Photoshop or iTunes or whatever Word.
I mean, I guess, you know, going with them hiding, which by the way, this is a thing on Lion, in the users folder, you know, you have user folders for each user. And for the individual users, there used to be a library folder. So there was the main system library folder and then each user had their own library folder. That folder is still there. But it is now hidden.
Yeah.
The average user, unless you're in his root or is showing hidden folders or you know how to manually access that folder, you don't see it.
Yeah.
Now, I can almost imagine in a hiding sense, let's say, you know, they hit everything except, you know, so as an end user, you didn't see this happening, but it is being filed and foldered, but you don't see it. So if I want documents, I'm clicking a button that says documents, but it's actually not a folder with documents in it, you know, or I create project links basically, you know?
Well, and bust this.
You know what I mean? Like if you – like in the background, it's still doing what we want it to do.
Of course, same stuff, same functions.
But you're just not seeing it is interesting.
10.8 comes out. You boot it up, right? There's no desktop. There is Launchpad.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way you go and find stuff, the way you find your applications. You want to go and listen to music, you go into iTunes and it has all your music. You want to go and work on a project, you know, in Word, you launch Word. Let's see, you want to go and put that into Scrivener. You go and transfer, you know, you do a save to or send to some way. And there
and
it goes.
And you have one more button that says all documents.
Yeah. You want to or maybe like you have to go to a different application, a special application, even look at documents.
Imagine, but that's okay.
It's like it's all database. It's all there, obviously, but it's all database driven the way you look at it. Obviously, all the files are individually there in iTunes, right? But you never see that unless you go spelunking.
Mm-hmm.
That to me makes sense in a weird way. Like I'm working on, you know, the show. I open up Logic. I create this new thing. It's saving. I know Logic is saving it somewhere in my
heart. It's almost like there has to be some sort of project manager built into the OS. So like if you're in Logic, right, and you go open, you can say open project. And then it's going to not just show Logic files, but say everything that you've tagged with that project. Or if you're in Word, you know, open project, and then you can navigate to this, my project I've tagged photos, you know, music files, blah, 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 and I'm entering them into my Word doc. But I can get to them easily. But the thing is, you need – like sometimes you want to go into that folder and see what you got before you start working on it. Like, I don't want to go into Word first. Sometimes I want to look at my folder and see, okay, I have the document, I have the picture, I have the blah, 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 blah. I'm not working on it yet.
But in a world where
– right?
But in a world of SSD drives where the assumption is that – you know, they talked about in Lion, they have that thing that you can take the open application indicator off.
Mm-hmm.
In a world where it is like iOS and the application is instant on – and resumes its immediate state, there is no real conception about not going into something. There's just switching to Word and seeing what's there. And that becomes your viewport to, you know, projects within that that you want to manipulate in a word processor.
I wish there was a way to actually just try that on a desktop experience. There's really not yet.
All this stuff seems like baby steps, and like that's where it's pointing. You know what I mean? It's not there yet. And all these things are interesting pieces that I think that's where it's kind of headed. But I think for a lot of people, a lot of people, that would be a godsend.
Yeah, I think maybe.
You know, power users, I mean, there's always going to be people that want to go and have people see behind the curtain.
Give the option.
But I'm saying is I don't think they'll ever go and I don't think it'll ever get rid of completely. Like if you want to get into the library folder now, you can still do it.
Yeah.
But in terms of what the default experience is, I think that would be – I think a lot of people would love it.
I think, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know.
I got to think about my mom who like would love to go and use more. But like this, honestly, it's confusing. That's not to say like, you know, parents can't do it. I think it's lots of people across all walks of life. It's like there's a barrier of entry of just, you know, having to understand how computers work that you and I probably don't understand.
No, it's hard for us to understand.
You know what I mean?
It is very hard for us to understand that.
Yeah.
What other Lion features were there that you like – that kind of stood out to you?
There's lots of small refinements, like some of you were looking at before. Whenever you go and lasso a bunch of, you know, files, we're talking about files, right? When I drag them around to a different folder or to the trash before, now it'll has a little red pop-up where it'll go and tell you
how many you've selected,
which is
awesome.
It's a nice little small refinement, but it's really cool.
Resizing the windows from all corners.
From all corners.
That's different.
I actually went in they also – the push is to have no Chrome, as you know, anytime they can, like you get rid of all Chrome around windows. I actually don't like that in certain cases. Like You know, at the bottom of every Mac window in the Finder, it would say you have, you know, how many items.
Yeah, how many takes.
Actually, that's default off. I brought that back because I just need, once again, I like the point of reference.
Yeah.
But once again, it's getting to that point where they're pointing towards you don't need to know about this stuff because it's getting taken care of.
Yeah.
And I guess.
But that, you know what? That's a key phrase, though, that you said, you know, point of reference. Mm-hmm. Because it could be, with all this stuff, it could be very easy to get lost in your workflow if you don't have a point of reference. Somehow.
In terms of
visually, just where you are, what you're doing. I'm surfing the web, I'm IMing with somebody, I'm working on a Word doc, and I'm listening to music.
Right.
Like, I could get lost in that and not remember. I could all of a sudden be like, oh, wait, I was working on a Word doc 10 minutes ago. Because I got lost in the web browsing and visually I wasn't seeing it up there as, oh, you need to be working on this.
Oh, you're talking about a visual cue just for your own work. Gotcha.
That's, you know.
You know what I think? The only thing they need to add if they're going to do full screen, they need push notifications in the OS. Oh, they need to build in, like, basically growl. You know what I mean?
That's interesting.
But within the OS.
That's very interesting.
Like, so if I'm like working on a web browser and like, I'm, you know, right now if I'm using Spotify, you know, and I'm in full screen and, you know, mail, yeah. New song pops up, it'll like, you know, song starts playing. Spotify can tell me if I want it to via growl. Something like that actually makes sense.
It does.
With a full screen modal, desktop, you know, full screen modal approach. Yeah.
That is interesting. I didn't think about that.
Huh.
Maybe it's coming.
Eventually.
Eventually.
Yeah. Eventually. But what I do like, though, I got to say,
Did you find the... Well, no, go ahead first.
No, just that modal thing we're talking about. Like, what if you did full screen all the time? There's always the question with iOS where, you know, it's different. Like, multitasking, blah, 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 doesn't matter. Like, it's okay to have these full screen apps when it's this limited usage device, blah, blah, blah. Running stuff full screen on my Mac, running my normal applications with full power and stuff in full screen, you know, in that same modal context feels really, really nice. Mm. I feel more focused because I don't have this other distraction. I'm not being distracted by my dock and by the computerousness of it all.
Right.
You know, I'm just working on my task. That actually feels really, really nice.
Mm. That's interesting.
You know, and I actually think to that end, I'm running right now two monitors. Mm-hmm. I have my MacBook Pro monitor open. I also have an external. I don't like the way it plays full screen with this other one because the second monitor just becomes a big piece of linen. It doesn't really do anything when you're in full screen.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it seems very much geared towards focusing you on your task that way.
Can you put up another?
Mm-mm, it's just there.
Oh, I think they're going to change that because that makes dual monitors useless.
I think
makes them useless. That doesn't make sense.
But all the movement, if you think about all
like
the...
Like, imagine if you could actually swipe between the two screens and like, actually shift everything over, you know?
But here's what I'm wondering. All of their pro apps have been moved to single window interfaces. Logic, Final Cut, all of them across the board.
Really? You can't expand them to two screens?
I mean, you can move stuff around and slide it around. Like I can go and
you
open...
You know, like
I can
in open a Photoshop type thing, you want the full screen and you want the tools on the other screen. You know, like that kind of thing. You can't open another window and...
I don't know that you can, actually. Huh. It's because everything's been moved to like this single window perspective. And I know Final Cut is a big deal because you used to have your bin. You'd push your bin over to the side.
Right.
You know? But I almost feel like...
That's what your iPad's for. And you're going to have your tools on the iPad.
But I feel like that's what they're going for. Like, you know, you want to go in... You don't need it up... If you have a 27-inch monitor, do you really need two screens? Like,
some people do.
I mean, some people do, obviously. And there's obviously use cases for that. But... All the time.
I mean, I do. I know a lot of people that use the multiple screens for full screen multitasking currently.
Yeah. I mean, I use it for all my other stuff too. You know what I mean?
That's nice, you know.
If I embrace that full screen thing we were talking about, if we do it for a day, like, what's the net result of that? Do you even want that there? I don't know.
I feel like they're pushing towards it,
you know?
Yeah. I would like to see that integrated. I really would. I think that would be an interesting integration.
You know, and they're pushing.
Multi full screen could be cool.
And they're obviously pushing dual monitors with all the new devices, yeah. Thunderbolt and stuff. Right. So there's got to be some solution they have in mind.
Yeah. Maybe they're just, you know, baby steps.
Yeah.
Baby steps. When you installed, found it pretty smooth?
Yeah, it was easy.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, it was
I take that back. I had one new transfer that I did from a mini to a mini from 10.4. By the way, migration, perfect.
Easy peasy.
Yeah, amazing. Awesome. Nice. I was like, wow, that was unexpected and cool that I was able to go from 10.4 to Lion.
Yeah.
I didn't think they were going to allow that, to be honest.
You were migrating. You weren't upgrading.
Migrating. Yeah, I upgraded a mini. Smooth, no problem. Upgraded iMac, smooth. In the upgrade, kind of neat. Obviously, you have to download the file from the App Store. But if you happen to save that file, you can. And you can, you know, you can actually run that off of an external hard drive on a machine to run the update if you want to.
Oh, cool. So you can run it to like a USB or whatever and then
yeah,
like-
and just run it. And the night, the way I'm guessing it works, because I couldn't figure it out at first, but so these new machines have this built-in disk partition that's like a recovery partition. Mm-hmm. So I and actually I've confirmed that this is what happens. When you start the install, the first thing it does is create that partition and then reboots in that partition to finish the install. Yeah. So you don't have to have a disk. You just need to launch that file from either your machine or an external drive. That's why you don't need a disk.
Yeah.
Because it works completely different. Because before, it would reboot off the disk in order to install the OS.
And one thing else that is really cool about this, and we touched on it briefly before, is you can go and if you have problems with your machine, and let's say you don't have the Lion install, whatever, you can go and like reboot from that recovery partition and basically update your machine or reinstall your machine over the internet directly from Apple servers.
And what's interesting, and this is kind of –
because the partition isn't enough to hold that whole
four gigs
or whatever.
No, and – this is interesting too. This was a feature previous, but it does it now from this recovery partition. If you do a restore from – if you're in the recovery partition and you do restore from Time Machine, it actually restores – the Time Machine actually has your whole OS in there. So it actually wipes and restores the OS and your settings and everything.
Oh, wait, so it installs –
so if your OS gets corrupted and jacked and you don't have a disk or anything – you can go into this recovery partition, restore from Time Machine, and have the whole OS renewed and everything.
And it comes up with – but with Lion, but with all your old stuff.
If you had backed up Lion, if you had backed up Snow Leopard, it would restore Snow Leopard.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And oh, cool. It even warns you about that.
That it's not going to upgrade to Lion.
If like – yeah. If you had like,
– so it just serves as a pure restore from backup. It's not actually –
a clone almost of your whole machine.
That's really cool. I've had a case where I had to go and replace a hard drive, and I did the same thing with my Time Machine backup. It's one of these things where how easy is it going to really be, or how good is the Time Machine that I've had plugged in for a year and a half. Yeah. Worked like advertised. Very impressed.
Now, I did have another issue this week with
the migration thing.
A migration from an old Air to a new Air. And it wouldn't finish the migration, which is unfortunate. We don't know what it was. Just we tried everything we could do. Restore from Time Machine, computer to computer, nothing. It wouldn't finish.
Yeah. To be fair, you have not.
For 20 hours.
But you didn't go and – of course, I'm like, I'm a big nerd. So I'm like, oh, why is it not? Why is it doing it? What's the problem? So I'm like, well, not yet. I'm like, migrate each – because there's a bunch of checkboxes you can go through. So I'm like, do each one separately, which Scott's like, that's a lot of time. That's not happening. Because I know that may have happened today.
Well, I'll find out. But what I had recommended, funny enough, was, and I don't know if people out there know this or not, but if you've ever looked in your Time Machine backup folder, it's a folder called backups.backup, and it's all convoluted and there's a million folders inside of it. But at the bottom of that folder is a folder called latest. And if you click on latest, it's your complete latest machine with all the most current files. So if you wanted to manually copy everything to a new machine, you can go into the latest folder and just drag in your desktop documents, pictures, music, movies, and it works. You know, you could do that manually. So that also maybe was happening today for Bobby. So, all right. So Lion.
Yep. So, so lots of neat stuff. It's, it is weird. Like, I don't know if I would go, you know, my dad was asking, should he upgrade? I don't know if I would, you know, we said before, like, hold off. I think that would still be my advice. It's very much a transitional OS, I feel like, as not in like, you know, it's between different platforms, that kind of thing. But there are concepts that are new concepts that are emerging in computing that this is the first hint of it we're seeing. And I was very curious to see what the reaction is going to be when you go and get a the scrolling thing, I'm like, oh, this is terrible. This isn't going to work. Someone got a new MacBook Air, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they booted it up and he was messing with I forget what application. He was in iTunes scrolling through Windows. And you know what he said to me? Oh, this is cool. It's just like the iPad.
Oh, interesting.
Like to him, it made complete sense. So I'm very curious to see how like regular people who aren't thinking about this kind of go with it.
Because
it comes engaged by default. So if you just kind of go with it for a little while, does that take hold immediately? And I don't know.
I think it does. Yeah. I think it probably does. I still don't think it makes sense, but it probably becomes easy to do.
Like I said, it's a matter of – it comes down to like, you know, getting rid of the window Chrome. And to me, it's really like, are you manipulating the window or are you manipulating the data within the window? Mm-hmm. That's the difference.
Yeah.
You know, conceptually, that's what it is. That makes – unfortunately, what it is with a touch mouse, like the Magic Mouse, whatever it's called, it makes a lot of sense. With a scroll mouse, because it is like a physical device, whatnot, it feels physically analogous to a Windows scroll bar more. So it's less intuitive on a physical scrolling mouse.
True.
But like with using like, you know, the Apple One or any kind, like the Arc or any of that kind of stuff.
That's a good point.
It makes a lot more, new Apple One, Lion One makes a lot more sense. But it's, you don't really think about how the feel of a device informs actually how you, what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you never bother to think about that, but it's really, really, there's a noticeable difference. At work, I have a physical scroll wheel on my mouse.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And that one is that you actually have to think about it. It feels, you know, it's knobbed. It looks like a scroll wheel. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Physically looks
it,
like
it. Looks
it.
So like that, a wheel. It's so that, a wheel. So in that, your head, your wheel, so you're
that,
thinking.
So that feels like I should be manipulating the window, you know, where if the touch device manipulating the data is much more intuitive. So
right.
It's interesting.
Well, you know what's funny is if you think of it in a real world scenario, you know, think of like a pulley system.
Yeah.
You know, because when you pull down, the item you're trying to pull goes up. And when you go up, the item comes down.
Yeah.
So it's, if you translate it that way in your head, it actually makes sense. It's interesting. I don't know.
Yeah.
And like if I'm pulling a water barrel up on a pulley system, I'm pulling it down to make it go up.
Yeah.
And I'm lowering it down to, you know.
And it's also about like touching a flat surface to do it makes it different too. Like if it's like a screen or if it's like a touchpad or like a touch mouse.
Yeah.
Flat surface, it's like that, and that relates more directly to like, you know,
especially with flicking and like going like flicking and what's,
yeah.
Swiping.
Yeah. Flicking, and I got to say, they changed a couple default behaviors in those gestures from the ones that were in Snow Leopard. So if you're used to doing certain, you know, swipes with three fingers, you may have to go and adjust or move around. A couple of them, I don't have like the pinch to zoom, that kind of stuff seemed to just weird to me. It seemed to be a touch too much.
Yeah.
But in terms of like, you know, going between apps and that kind of stuff, a lot of stuff was really cool.
Right. Right.
And like I said, that holy grail, of being able to go and be full screen and swipe and then pinch for launch pad. That made so much sense.
Yeah, you were in
that. That was really, really great. And like, it became frustrating that I actually had to go to a keyboard
and
type
couldn't
data.
Do it. Yeah.
Yeah, because it just seemed like you wanted it to be all in one big touch interface.
Right.
You know?
Interesting.
So then you kind of go, okay, cool. Like in 5 years, do we have some sort of touch keyboard that has tactile, you know, feedback? I mean,
yes. Interesting. That would be amazing.
Yeah. So anyway, that is Lion.
That
is our very long-winded look at Lion.
Roar.
Stop.
Just roar. Stop. Roar. Well, it's a lion. Lions roar. Can you play like the MGM logo noise for this episode?
I'm sorry, everybody. He's his own person. I just work here. So not okay. Anyway, do you have any food this week,
sir? I do. This is going to be the last of my Chicago food segments.
Hey, Scott, you know what?
What?
Roar.
There you go.
No. That was terrible. I'm cutting that out.
You are not. So two things, very Chicago food-based things. I went to an amazing barbecue restaurant called The Smoke Daddy in Wicker Park in Chicago. This is, you know, they have it's a small place. It's been around for a while. They have a huge smoker in the back of the restaurant. And I got a combo of baby back ribs, pulled pork, brisket, and then it had cornbread and baked beans on the side. It was it was a delicious platter of food.
Sounds awful.
It was terrible. Now, to start off the meal, my brother actually got a Bloody Mary. And what they did special with this Bloody Mary was they actually had the Bloody Mary, and then they had a piece of brisket on a skewer with barbecue sauce in the Bloody Mary.
Shut up. So it's
barbecue brisket Bloody Mary.
It's a meat beverage.
A meat beverage. It was incredible.
By the way, that's the episode title.
Boom. Yeah, it was something special. It was something special.
But was it in the Bloody Mary, or was it just like a top?
It was on the top, but it like had the barbecue sauce kind of – I think the barbecue sauce was part of the mixture of the Bloody Mary. So it was like all in one, and you like – it was delicious. It was great.
Was it really?
Yeah,
was it really?
No, it really was. Okay. It was something – it was perfect. It was the perfect drink. That was a perfect drink for a barbecue place. The barbecue, the baby back ribs, the meat just flew off the bone. I mean, it was.
It actually attacked you.
Yeah, I couldn't stop. It just came into my mouth. And then I had the barbecue brisket, which was so-so. It was just okay, unfortunately, because I love barbecue brisket. And it just wasn't. It was all right. It wasn't the best thing in the world. Pulled pork was phenomenal. Moist, tender, barbecue, deliciousness. I mean, it was I have a newfound love for pork. I don't know, within the past couple of years. I just,
you're on a show called Tech Bacon.
I know.
And you're only now discovering love for pork?
No. I'm saying in the past couple of years, I never was like, I never really got pork chops, and I would eat bacon and stuff, but like pork shoulder or pulled pork or anything. I was more a meat and chicken guy. But man, when pork is done right,
yeah,
it's pretty amazing.
That's true. Because do you have pork chops as a kid?
Not really.
I feel like when I had them as a kid, they were were thin and terrible.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, this is lame. And recently I started going, like, making my own pork chops and, like, seasoning them. And, like,
huge,
you get
tender, thick.
And it's like a ribeye. Like, a good one's like a ribeye.
Yes. That's
good.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And it's not something I just never, you know, when I was younger, that just wasn't a thing.
Have I talked about the way I make pork chops?
No, but please talk right now.
Real quick. And this is nothing like revolutionary, but it's really, really good.
Go for it. Shoot it. And Brian will put this up.
I won't put it up. You can listen to the show. basically take a couple cloves of garlic, right? And, like, you know, mince them up really, really fine.
Mm-hmm.
Get your pork chop and basically coat them on both sides with that garlic. And then, like, some, you know, not pepper, like, you know, from the, you know, crappy thing, like real, like, you
ground
know,
crushed pepper.
Yeah, exactly. Thick on both sides, right? Warm up a skillet a little bit, you know, like low heat just to get it warm. Pour some olive oil in there and mm-hmm. let that heat up a bit on medium heat. And then put the pork chop in and, you know, do it either side till it's done. Take it out. And then when you're done with that, put some red wine in the mixture of, like, you know, garlic and, you know, olive oil and stuff and, like, kind of like meat drippings that have gone in there.
Uh-huh.
Mix that up. It's going to go, like, ballistic and, like, really, really loud and, like, you make lots of noise and make a big mess. But then it's going to cook down and then baste the pork chop on all sides and all edges.
You reduce it and then you bake.
Exactly.
Ooh, wow.
And then take it out. It is awesome.
That sounds amazing.
It's really good.
No, you're going to post that up on that's a great recipe because I want to try it.
Yeah. And sometimes putting out is me, I'm going to go and add some salt to the.
It just sounds simple and perfect.
Yeah, it's really good.
Like, that's a really great. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. We got to host like a Tech Bacon dinner one day with all our friends and stuff. Have people bring recipes and then, like,
that'd be fun.
Do it on the show.
Tech Bacon potluck.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good idea.
Oh my God. We're totally doing that. No, we're doing it. We're doing it. Done.
Done.
So the other thing I'm going to talk about is, when I was in Chicago, my brother introduced me to a new whiskey.
Interesting.
Yes. And I haven't really talked about booze all that much on the food segments here. But so there is a whiskey in the Midwest. It's available in San Francisco too. It's only available in like 4 or 5 cities right now. It's a small batch whiskey company called Templeton Rye, based out of Iowa. And the whiskey takes, I think, about 5+ years. I think it's 5 or 7 years to actually, you know, distill the whiskey. Mm-hmm. So what's special about this whiskey is this whiskey was Al Capone's whiskey of choice that he used to bootleg into Chicago.
In terms of recipe or?
Yeah, the recipe. From these distillers in Iowa. They would get it from these distillers and bootleg it into Chicago from Iowa back in the 20s. So this recipe kind of had been passed down from family to family and pretty much disappeared for a while. It was still around probably in Iowa, but it was never made. It was never sold or anything like that. So this guy, I can't remember his name, but I'll post the story up on our site. It's very interesting, but his family was part of this bootlegging and operation back in the 20s, whatever. He would talk to his uncle about it and he said, did he know anybody who still had the recipe? And the uncle's like, yeah, there's one family in Iowa that still has the recipe. So this guy approached the family and eventually was able to get the recipe. It was written down, handwritten on a small piece of paper, of the recipe for this rye, right? And he went into business with them, and they create, you know, this is in the early 2000s. They created it, and the first batch came out a few years ago for the first time, and only really in Iowa. And so now they built a distillery in their hometown of Templeton, Iowa, and they're starting to branch out to sell this rye. It's amazing whiskey.
That's awesome.
And it's called the good stuff. Like, it's Templeton Rye, the good stuff. Like, that's what Al Capone, that's what everybody used to call this whiskey, was the good stuff. It's amazing. I mean, I'd never heard of it. My brother knows the guys that kind of distribute it. So he has some in Chicago, and I think he's had some in his restaurants in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I mean, you like whiskey.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
I mean, so I'm a whiskey drinker myself also. This is very smooth, good whiskey. It's really, it has a little sweetness to it, almost kind of a caramely flavor to it. And it's smooth going down and it tastes amazing. It's just really, I need to get more.
Okay,
I need to get some.
Where can we buy this?
Well, that's the problem. It's very hard to come by. And I'll get us some. Don't worry about that. I will get us some.
Yes, please.
But it's really only available in a few states. So we'll put the link to the website. And they've only had their fourth season of barrels. So they make it because it takes so long to make. The first barrels only, came out not that long ago, but they keep upping their production and upping their production and trying to, to meet the demand for this whiskey. But it's just such a cool story, like I like to know the story of, and obviously you can tell when I tell these stories about food, I like the backstory and I think it's interesting. It makes for a more interesting experience, but this Templeton Rye is, it's something to experience. And if you can get your hands on some. There's some online resellers that you can find.
I'm looking on their website right now. It is available. They have distributors in, what is this, New York, California, Illinois, and Iowa. But it looks like as though these are just maybe single stores.
Possibly. They own in California, they're in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Chicago, they're in Chicago. Iowa has a weird liquor law. They have to sell your liquor to the state liquor board, and then they distribute it. So I don't know where it's sold there. And somewhere in New York, but
Binny's Beverage Depot.
Binny's in Chicago.
Binny's.com.
Yeah, that's a Chicago place, I believe.
How does it work with shipping alcohol? Can you do that?
You can order alcohol. I don't know how it works, but I know you can. I don't know if they have to have a local, reseller or whatever. But if you want more information about Templeton Rye, go to their website, templetonrye.com, and you can read the story. It's just an awesome story. And what's really cool is they have this process, and this kind of goes to the online aspect of stuff. And these days, they've been interviewing people in their city and getting the older generation stories. And they're putting them online, and there's stuff online on their website. So they have all these YouTube videos and the history and the things. But at the end of the day, all that stuff is cool, but at the end of the day, this whiskey is awesome. It tastes great. It makes you feel good. And, you're drinking Al Capone's whiskey. What can I say?
Not bad.
So that is my tag to my Chicago food adventures.
So get baseball bat, have whiskey.
Yeah. Okay. And that's Chicago for now. There will be other cities and more back to California starting next week.
Oh man, we have to go and figure out that pizza thing. We have to do. There are a couple things talking about here. Special food sections. One, there's a place here in LA we're going to go and review soon and check out.
We got to go there.
Yeah, and also food trucks are this big thing, as everybody knows. And we are putting together a plan to do a several week review of some of the top food trucks in Los Angeles. Which I'm just excited about because I want to eat. Yeah, mm-hmm. Basically.
Yes.
So that's some stuff on tap. If you guys have anything in LA area or SoCal you want us to check out, let us know. And we will definitely put it on our list.
Absolutely.
Because if we haven't said this 2 seconds ago, I like to eat.
Just a little.
A lot.
A lot.
Yeah, a lot.
Roar.
No. On that note, thanks again for joining us, everybody. We appreciate you listening to the show. If you dig it, go to iTunes and rate us there. It helps new people find the show and new listeners.
Please. For all the people on Stitcher out there, our newest members, it's great to have you on here and keep listening.
Yeah, definitely. And if you dig the show, spread the word. We appreciate your help.
Spread the love. Like us on Facebook.
Yeah.
Drop us a line.
Yeah, on Twitter at TechBacon. Also, I'm there at BC Bishop.
You were there. At Scotty G7.
Yeah, so thanks so much for joining us, guys. I'm Brian.
I'm Scott.
Take care.